everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Board of Public Works. I don't know about you all, but I like the change of venue. It's nice to get out of the State House, especially during the legislative session. But it's great to join my colleagues here at the Lewis Goldstein building for our annual bond sales. The great news is, and the treasurer announced last week, that all three rating agencies once again reaffirmed Maryland's AAA bond rating, which is terrific news. Maryland is one of only 11 states in the entire country to receive this coveted rating, and I think it's because of as a result of the fact that we work so well together in a bipartisan manner to act as prudent stewards of the taxpayers' money. All three bond rating agencies noted our sound budget policy, strong financial controls, and prudent debt management. And I just want to applaud Treasurer Cobb and her great staff, and the comptroller and his terrific team, and thank them for all the hard work that they do in collaboration with our administration, and particularly with Budget Secretary David Brinkley and his team. And without everybody working together, I don't think we would have achieved this AAA bond rating. So let's give them and all their staff a great thank you.
Let me only add, Governor, that as the Secretary and the Comptroller know, we every 6 months sit around a big table and talk to all the rating agencies and answer all the questions, and we are joined by representatives of the legislature. And it really, it's Maryland speaking with one voice and answering sometimes some tough questions. You are absolutely right about what they say about our relatively conservative system of financial control, but also the fact that we are blessed with a very well-educated citizenry and good, strong economy and great diversity. Even though we have a very significant federal presence, it's a diverse federal presence, not like Virginia that is focused basically just on defense, but you have Social Security, defense, and NASA, all the other fine institutions. And it has stood Maryland well, and I think will continue to. But we always keep our fingers crossed. So you're right, when we got those calls, it was very exciting. Today, we'll see the impact of that rating when we have the bond sale at 11 o'clock. I think be able to show the people of the state of Maryland that keeping that AAA bond rating, in fact, benefits not only our schools, our roads, and all our capital construction, but the taxpayers. So, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Yes, thank you, Governor and Madam Treasurer. I also want to join in and compliment the Governor and the legislative leaders on the session that they're having. It's a little surprising because it is an election year and everybody's all on edge on things, but we seem to be having a calm, professional, reasonable approach to things. And the fact that the legislature and their committees, I think, are looking at adjusting the deduction for state taxes. I think that's a reasonable tax cut that we can implement in the comptroller's office. And I'm just happy to see, instead of a lot of friction, the governor join in and say that's terrific. It doesn't matter whose name is on it. Just get the job done. So hats off to everybody in Annapolis for being in stark contrast with what's going on in Washington. As you know, Governor, my team and I are committed to protecting the taxpayers of Maryland from being victimized by fraudsters and identity thieves. Thanks to the hard work of my dedicated team and the additional statutory authority granted to my agency by the unanimous passage and enactment last year of the Taxpayer Protection Act, Maryland continues to be a national leader in combating the epidemic of tax fraud and identity theft that threatens the financial security of innocent and hardworking Marylanders. As part of our very focused mission to protect taxpayers. Last week, we suspended processing returns from 20 suspicious tax preparers from Georgia to Maryland. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the group in Atlanta that we suspended, but it was something like Quick Cash or Rapid something or other. I don't know. Whatever it was, we suspended them because of our evidence that we had that they were filing fraudulent returns. Yeah, it was something. It was something that you should avoid if you see it in the neon sign. This action of suspending 20 preparers was in addition to my agency's previous suspension of returns coming from 14 preparers since January, bringing the total of tax preparers in and around Maryland that we have suspended to 136 tax preparers at 146 locations since 2015. Every one of them have been given very easy access to us to simply explain why so many fraudulent returns are coming from their operation. Two of them, I believe, have actually showed up after making appointments. Most of them didn't make appointments. Those that did, most of them didn't show up. But I believe two did come, and I think it's one of them perhaps has been reinstated. But since the beginning of this year, my questionable returns detection team has blocked more than 1,300 fraudulent returns and withheld more than $2.6 million in fraudulent refunds. That's on top of the more than 88,000 fraudulent returns who were successfully intercepted worth over $190 million over the last 10 years. These staggering figures highlight the continued threats facing taxpayers and tax administrators at all levels of government. My agency remains committed to aggressively and effectively protect our citizens from these brazen criminals. In this technologically advanced world, we need to remain one step ahead of these felons, and we're doing just that thanks in large part to the many unsung heroes within my agency who are working ceaselessly to stop these predators from harming the financial integrity and innocent Marylanders each and every day. And I say this, we're just have processed the 1 millionth tax return of this tax season since the end of January. That's, for us, is a very significant figure because obviously we process around 3 million. But once we get to 1 million, we can basically say, okay, the system's not going to fall apart. I hate to be that dramatic, but that's what happens with this technology. But we're using that same technology to thwart these financial criminals because of the filters that we're putting all the tax returns through and we're putting them aside. So I'm pretty happy that we're able to combine quick refunds, well over $1 billion, immediately back into taxpayers' pockets and into the Maryland economy, but also head off this increasing epidemic of fraudulent returns. So I'm very proud of those efforts, remain grateful for the work that they do. In the years ahead, we're going to continue to utilize every resource at our disposal to go after these folks that are actually perpetrating these crimes. We want to bring them into court. If they're found guilty, we want to send them to jail. And we're working very hard with, frankly, with Attorney General Frosch and his team to put some of these unscrupulous preparers and fraudsters behind bars. So, Governor, thank you for the support that you gave us last year, and Madam Treasurer, your colleagues and my colleagues in the legislature have done a good thing, and we hope to have some court action to not just prevent crime, but actually hold people accountable.
Thank you very much. We're going to get started with the Secretary's agenda. I'll just remind everyone that we'll be breaking in with some bombshell activities around 7 o'clock, so if we cut you off in mid-sentence, you'll know why. We've got millions of dollars at stake, so we'll get right back to you when we stop that. So go ahead.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 13 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. We also have 8 reports of emergency procurements. Item 13 is the bond sale to which you referred, so we will hold that item off the agenda until we come back at 11 o'clock from Treasury. The rest of the items, we're ready for your questions.
I'd like to just touch on item 5, please.
Item 5, Secretary Belton will talk about the expenditure of general obligation bond proceeds on the Coastal Bay, or the Coastal Bay Trust Fund program.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor, for bringing this up. This is correcting some sins of the past here at the IRS particular issue. In November of 2016, the Public Works issued an advisory talking about all projects that were even remotely slightly funded by GEO bonds had to come before the Board of Public Works for approval. Taking that and looking back at our records, in years 13, 14, and 15, Chesapeake and Atlantic Coastal Trust Fund projects went through the procurement process, they went through the legislature for approval, part of the budget bill that had in those years, but they did not come to the Board of Public Works for approval. So we are looking back and correcting those problems in those fiscal years. Year 16, 17, 18, and projected here for 19, that has not been an issue. Mostly because you were fully funding the trust fund and all those projects, so they're all funded in cash. For those 3 previous years, you were on 3 years.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Secretary. Yeah, I have no problem with this item at all, but I wanted to bring it up just to thank you and your team for your efforts in this regard. And I want to reiterate our administration's commitment to protecting and restoring Chesapeake Bay. In addition to this being the 3rd consecutive year fully funding Chesapeake and Atlantic Coastal Bay's fund, which I'm not sure has ever happened before. But today we've committed $4 billion to cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay, and it's latest report card, we got the highest score in a quarter century, and the treasurer just showed me a great article in today's Baltimore Sun talking about the tripling of bay grasses because of the clean, healthy water. So thank you and your partner.
Could I just add that the article pointed out that the concentration has fallen by almost a quarter since 1984, which shows the need for consistent, ongoing, sometimes you have a feeling the federal government wants to do it off and on and not now and then, but this consistent work on the part of the state and our partners has really made a tremendous difference.
You could be more correct, Madam Treasurer. Now was not the time to cut back on commitments to restoring the Chesapeake Bay. We're seeing demonstrative progress in a lot of areas. You mentioned the bay grass. There's great news on that today. But also with our keystone species of striped bass and crabs, and the dead zones are smaller than they have been in the past. And now is the time to keep the pressure off.
Yeah, and as the chairman of the 6-state regional commission, we've been leading the fight to try to make sure that the federal funding is protected. We're talking about $123 million of federal funding, which we're fighting to make sure is still covered. It's important. It doesn't stack up to the $4 billion that we put in. It's about what we put in every month. But it is important, and we're going to fight for it and try to get make sure that we're covered by it. I also want to say that, you know, billions of dollars were drained from the Chesapeake Bay Restoration Fund, from Program Open Space, from the Coastal Bay, the Chesapeake and Coastal Atlantic Base Fund, and we've restored all those dollars and we're fully funding as many of those as possible. So it's quite a difference from the past 8 years. Thank you.
And a significant investment in the
future. Absolutely.
Talking about investments.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I have a couple. First of all,
Number 8 is the Maryland Environmental Service Project. They are working on a wastewater treatment plant at the State Correctional Institution, which is led by Mr. Roy McGrath, Director of Indiana.
Good morning, Governor. Good to see you, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller.
This is a project with a long history, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but one of the things that I was curious about is that after getting only one response, the latest episode, getting one response, you did something and went out again and got 3 responses. And my question was, what did you do
It's a great question.
Make that happen.
And thanks for the opportunity to answer it. Just for the record, I'm William Kraft, Director of the Service. joined by my colleagues, Jason Gillespie, who heads our Environmental Services Group, and Ellen Kerketic, who is the head of engineering for our water and wastewater team. I'm going to defer to Ellen, who handled the procurement project for that, and we appreciate the opportunity to answer it.
Good morning. What happened when we only got the one response was that we actually, there was a second proposal that came in 5 minutes late. So we basically went back out. There was another firm that had expressed interest, that had not prepared a proposal, and we did approach them again, and we said, okay, we're doing this again, and everybody, this is the deadline. Get your proposals in by, 2 o'clock on December 5th, and we managed to get three, which was great. We didn't really make any great, major changes to the RFP, but we did talk to people.
So it was more a question of one of the bidders mm-hmm. making an error.
Yes.
And there's no provision for something like 5 minutes? I mean, there's no flexibility?
Everybody, there's about 10 or 12
you can change. You can't hear it wrong.
5 minutes.
5 minutes, I know.
Maybe when we do the bond sale later, we can ask the talk.
Well, I maybe in this whole history of looking for
cure, no, I'm glad the treasurer. I'm glad the treasurer brought it up, and really, the 5 minutes. I take it as a. Yeah. But I'm more concerned with what's happening down there than that, with this. Where, by the way, is Kings Creek? Because it sounds as if on a daily basis.
Tortured.
What? I mean, if the information's correct here, they were discharging a huge amount of raw sewage into Kings Creek.
No. No, that is not. That's
okay,
not.
Great.
Yeah. No, what is happening right now, there are two waste streams coming from ECI. One is coming from the wastewater treatment plant, and then the other is what we call reject. It's sort of like backwash from the reverse osmosis water plant. That RO reject has been going for years to Kings Creek. When the new permit was issued by the Department of the Environment, they said you need to combine. We had two choices. We could either put in treatment, special treatment just for that waste stream, or combine it with the wastewater plant discharge and treat everything as one. And that's what we chose to do because it was a lot cheaper to do it that way. But what, as far as the nitrogen and the phosphorus, and the sewage is being properly treated. The ECI wastewater treatment plant has been an ENR level treatment plant since 1995. What we're having to do with this new project is we're restricted to the number of pounds of nitrogen and phosphorus we can discharge. That hasn't changed. We just have to bring concentrations down a little. But right now, the wastewater treatment plant is meeting the permit requirements. It's just this little bit of waste that's going from the RO plant, the reject, that is not being treated. And it's very small quantities in the grand scheme of what's being discharged out of the wastewater plant. And that's actually going to the Minocan River. Everything will be going to the Minocan River when we're done with this project.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then finally, in the test preparation, it says KCI Technologies, which designed the upgrades, what they put in for instrumentation controls was inadequate, causing bidders to confusion during the original bid. It also caused the price to be escalated. Is KCI still involved in this?
KCI is still involved, but we had brought in a value engineering team to assess what had been done. And that's the other reason we decided to go with the CM at risk to finish up the project. Because we have a water plant and a wastewater treatment plant, and we have the treated effluent from the wastewater treatment plant going to the cogen, the instrumentation is kind of tricky. because everything has to work together. And that we're hoping that the CM that we're bringing in, who we've worked with on other big projects before, the really good construction firm, that we're going to get that all straightened out. We're going to be able to do figure out how to bypass certain things during the construction of the plant, and everything will be squared away.
But KCI is still involved?
Yes, sir.
And do they agree that they missed the mark somehow, or that, I don't mind a design engine. I don't mind a design bid. I thought that was a good model, but what you're saying makes sense. I'm just concerned that the original design was inadequate. Just people correcting it?
Yes, yes. That will be corrected.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Treasurer, for bringing that up.
Thank you. Thanks. She has one more.
I would just like, if Mr. Ford says me here.
No.
Item 12, which is your energy performance project, actually, with your very exciting wayside energy capture system. I'm just happy to see the Treasurer's Office could participate with the energy lease program, and I wish, Governor, that we could use that energy lease program for more great projects like this. I think the department is really on to something that's going to benefit everybody and our environment. And it just helps. My son, it's super cool. It's really good.
It's super cool, and you know, I don't know why she was so disappointed to see Secretary Ron here instead of apparently he's super cool too.
I know that Jim Ford was really intrigued by this project personally. It's a really good one.
We're excited about it as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. We all are. I have one other question, Governor, on appendices 5 and 7. These are emergency repairs. In this case, in the Department of Public Safety and Corrections, similar to ones we've seen on other agendas in other departments, and basically, my question, and you know how concerned we are about maintenance of state buildings, maintenance of public schools, keeping things in good repair, certainly not wasting money getting things that we don't need. But on the other hand, not keeping things until the bitter end, just with putting them together with bandages and then having them explode or fall apart, make emergency repairs, and end up spending more than we would have if we had a good system, the sort of thing that Secretary Churchill is talking about, with regular replacement at appropriate dates, when you know, almost invariably now with technology, you're going to replace old systems with new, more efficient ones and more cost-effective ones. So the question is, How do you look at these? How long are all of these systems expected actually to last? If you didn't just patch them up, but really look at life cycle cost.
It's a very good question. I'm David Bizanson, Assistant Secretary of Public Safety, and within the public safety corrections domain, we have a variety of ages of buildings, and we have been proactive in the last couple of years of demolishing and shutting down buildings that are beyond the cycle of useful building life. We have been replacing systems under capital projects at the Maryland Correctional Training Center in Hagerstown. We've replaced the steam lines and the heating systems in a capital project over the last 10 years, and we still have two buildings to replace the heating systems on. That building was 50 years in a life cycle before we replaced the heating systems. The emergencies that we experienced at Patuxent and at Chesapeake Detention Facility are buildings Chesapeake Detention Facility was 30 years from the 1980s. And we were faced with some extremely cold weather this winter, and it caught some coils that froze in that process and had to be replaced. We have a preventative maintenance system in place. We seek what we refer to as facilities renewal projects on roofs and on heating systems through the capital budget each year, and we have a backlog, and we attempt to replace all those systems within their life cycle. Now, within the corrections market, life cycles of buildings are stressed a little harder. They run 24/7. You can't shut them down. You can't displace the population.
And we know it's going to happen.
And proactively, we're replacing the heating systems in a capital project at ECI. We're in design of that project. We've replaced an MCTC. We've shut down and demolished the House of Correction that was beyond its useful life. But I think in corrections we're challenged because we use these buildings heartily and we use them continuously.
Have you ever had somebody come in and look, CGS, at what the cost-benefit
We do. And we looked at that in Baltimore, and in Baltimore we closed a number of buildings for particularly those reasons of the conditions of those buildings.
I'm talking about systems.
Systems in terms of looking at it for preventative maintenance.
Or replacement use.
Yes.
I ask to see your chart and
we have had building assessments of how the metrics worked in Baltimore and came to conclusions that buildings were better. And we had the opportunity to displace populations, and the governor did shut down buildings.
Yes, no question about that.
You know.
But you have things that show that you would not save money by acting more...
There's always an issue of priorities as to how we spend the maintenance money we have. Operationally, we have about $20 million in maintenance across 25 facilities.
I get that, but what I'm asking is, if you look at it just as a representative of the taxpayer and say we want over a period of time, maybe it's because we're on the investment committee and you look longer term, but we want over a period of time to have the most cost-effective system.
Right.
I can't believe that what we see every other week in these items would keep popping up.
You're seeing them in Baltimore and Jessup, and we're concentrating on Baltimore and Jessup to make those corrections.
By the way, you're not the only department.
Right. And I think it's prudent that the state look at its maintenance commitment, because you have challenges. We have a huge asset base in the state, and keeping up with all of this is particularly challenging.
Well, I thank you. I'd like to follow up. I don't want to keep this time.
Yeah.
But
I'd be happy to do that.
And if there could be an integrated statewide way.
Well, we work closely with DGS, with the facilities renewal budget on an annual basis, and they have an assessment of all the buildings and what we call project justifications and a priority list. So we're looking at those buildings from a structural point of view.
You're not doing the ones in an appropriate order. What I am saying is I wonder if we couldn't get a bigger bang for the buck if we looked at it more positively in terms of proactively in terms of a plant renewal system.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would say that there are issues all across state government from years or maybe decades of deferral of these maintenance projects, and I think Secretary Churchill, DGS, and most of our cabinet secretaries are now focused on trying to make some of these improvements and get our facilities up to speed, not just in the Department of Corrections, but everywhere else, and it's been a primary focus of ours, so we are trying to fix the crumbling buildings and prioritize them because we can't do every one of them at the same time. But certainly we had the same issue across the street at Government House. It was nearly falling down. It didn't meet code. And we went out and raised about $1 million
this
to try to fix
it
privately, because the state had not been putting money into the maintenance of it. This building, the state house, it's everywhere, and
we're
doing a very aggressive job of trying to bring these things up to speed with the limited dollars we have.
I also think in corrections, when you have a building failure of a system, you don't have the ability to defer that. You have to address it. Constitutionally required to.
I am.
For the safety of the public.
Support these items. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Thank you,
Mr. Secretary.
I'll only add that over the last couple of years, all of our departments are working on cooperative efforts to coordinate these projects. We try to couple our facilities projects to get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of replacements. So, as I mentioned, we're at the beginning of the beginning in terms of looking at an overall system. And so we have
that's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. We have a lot. We're going to be continuing to take this this challenge on, and it's not something that's going to be solved.
Secretary Churchill and I had a meeting earlier this week to talk about Lawyers Mall and the steam plant for the entire Annapolis complex that is 30 years overdue. And potentially about ready to explode, and shooting steam into the air. And that's a major, major undertaking. It's going to close roads, dig up Lawyers Mall, move statues. But you reach a point where somebody has to do something. And we're deciding to try to finally fix these things that nobody else ever wanted to.
When people are running around talking about the infrastructure, this is exactly what they're talking about. And I'm not saying for a moment that it's only your department or only the state of Maryland.
It's a national issue.
We could be a national model for acting proactively.
Thank you. I think we are. Thank you. So there's a motion on the table to approve the agenda. Is there a second? Second? 3-0. We're now move on to DNR.
Morning, Governor.
Morning.
I'm Mr. Treasurer. I'm Mark Belton, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We attend on DNR.
Any questions on DNR? Motion?
Move approval.
Second? 3-0. DBM.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management. Seven items for consideration. Item 2 has been revised, and I have representatives here to address any
concerns or questions. Concerns on DBM? Questions? Madam Treasurer, any questions on DBM?
Approval.
We're going so fast, we're going to be ahead of. We're going to sit around and wait for the 11 o'clock bond sale. So I'm just stalling a little bit. Yeah, I have some.
So what's the move?
Yeah. Okay, there's a second. 3-0 on DBM. We'll move on to the university system agenda. Good morning, Mr. Evans.
Good morning. Jerry Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 7 items on the agenda. We are withdrawing item 5C and 7R. Here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the university system agenda? Second, 3-0. Thank you, Mr. Evans. We're going to move on to information technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, the Acting Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have 2 items on your agenda, and I do have agency representatives available to answer any questions.
Questions for Secretary Leahy?
Yes, I had a question on item 1. The question is why, this may be for public safety, but why did the department need 18 additional months to restructure the replacement solicitation? Obviously, this is something that concerns payphones in prisons. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but it's a long time to...
Secretary Moyer has joined us at the podium. Good morning.
Thank you, Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Guilty as charged. I'll go to my state police roots. My dad did public service for 36 years. I'm in my 36th year. I'm in my 37th month of doing this job. I've had my 4th procurement director, who's Anna Lansall, who's here with us. We've been keeping a tally. This is the first time we've been called to the podium, I think, since since April. So after going for about a 12-month run of being here every day.
Well, we missed you, so.
But now this is all me. We were going to go out with a with an IFB, and we got it to do it late and do it recommended we do an RFP. So we're recommending the 18 months. In the event it goes to a new vendor, it would take the equipment that's in our facilities is not owned by us. It's owned by the vendor, so it would have to be a swap out. But where this is really on me is that the FCC had changed some language about commissions and rates. And I talked to my 49 other colleagues across the country, and a lot of us took the proactive approach of reducing the rates and the commissions on our own. This was in the U.S. Court of Appeals, and the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled against the FCC, and we're still waiting on the final ruling by the FCC. But I knew about this. Anna, like I said, has only been in the position since last May or April, and I should have had it on my radar, and I missed it.
See you in another couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah, but thanks for owning up to the screw up there.
So yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah, it's obviously a bit of an aberration given the federal intervention and some of that. But thank you, and I have a great confidence in you and your procurement officer. And thank you for, I agree, it's so rare to have someone accept. I guess blame for something that's gone wrong.
Very responsible.
Not that big a deal. So
he holds me pretty accountable.
Yeah, keep up the great work at agency.
Now that we roughed them up a little bit, I would say we're talking about payphones and changing services. It's because of Secretary Moyer and his investigation of corruption that we've indicted 100 people, including correctional officers and gang members who were pretty much running the prison system, who were sneaking in all these illegal cell phones, and now they aren't able to use those phones anymore, so they're probably frustrated.
Thank you for that effort. Appreciate it.
Good for you. I didn't realize it was that wide spread.
We still have more coming.
Yep. So, thank you.
Mr. Secretary, I have a question. I echo, as you know, my admiration of your work in this department and in your previous parts of state service. The cost now for an inmate or an inmate family to call, in some states I understand it's essentially prohibitive, which is why the FCC did something.
Correct.
And then was countermanded. But what will it be?
Well, thank you for the question, Madam Treasurer. I'm going to have Anna go over the specifics, but several of my colleagues across the country, we saw where this was going. The ACLU has filed lawsuits against several other departments of corrections across the country, and we think we did the right and fair thing, and I'll have Anna give the specifics on that.
For the record, my name is Anna Lansall, Director of Procurement for Public Safety and Correctional. The current rate is 0.0345. Through the negotiation, the actual ceiling rate is 11 cents. So through the negotiation that Secretary Moore conducted with GTL in 2016, our rates are still the lowest in the country and will continue so. But with the FCC ruling and the U.S. Court of Appeals overruling, saying the FCC does not have the authority to cap the ceiling, we have to put this out for competitive bid, RFP, and see what rates that we come back with.
Our goal, I assume, is to get low rates that the families can stick together. The
low rates are important because the more that the inmate population has contact with the family, it does reduce the stress, and it reduces assaults and things of that nature within the facility. So we've had positive response across the state.
So the point is that we have the lowest in the country, plus the federal action might throw that out the window.
Yes, sir. I think we're in the right position to be in until the final ruling comes out.
Well, good luck with this work.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Any other?
I have a quick question on item two. Not for you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Moore.
Thank you, sir. Anyone here from the State Board of Elections?
the administrator of the State Board of Elections.
Isn't that great?
Put her by the window, but she's here.
She was being quiet and hiding in the corner.
Yes, hiding in the corner. Good morning, Governor. Controller, Treasurer. I'd like to introduce Linda Lamone, Administrator of Elections. This is Keith Ross. He is the Assistant Deputy at the State Board of Elections for Project Management, and he has been working tirelessly on the issue that the controller is going to bring up. So,
okay. So as I understand it, we're paying $150,000 approximately to one of our vendors because their equipment or our equipment that we stored for them was in a moldy environment and got rendered, I guess, unusable.
Can I restate that just a bit, please?
Yeah, thank you. Please, because I'm just...
It's the state's equipment, that's true. We are leasing it. It's the Worcester County that is responsible for payment of this amount in the agenda item before you. There is considerable more that the county is going to be liable for because of their negligence in storing the voting equipment.
Got it. So what happened? Are we... it's Worcester County. It's not the State Board of Elections.
That's correct.
And Worcester County is going to reimburse you, or you? Or
we're going to bill them.
You're going to bill them.
Right.
Okay.
And if they don't pay us, we'll send them to Central Collection.
Okay. So that's a little different than I understood. So good. I'm glad you're on top of that. And what exactly happened, I guess, is it?
Well, when we first got the new voting equipment back in 2015 statewide, we hired a firm to go out and survey all the local board facilities. And the facility that was supposed to be used in Worcester County met the requirements that we had established, humidity, temperature, security, but it was too small. So the Worcester County government, without telling us, put the equipment in the liquor board warehouse. And the local Board of Elections found out about a mold issue, but they never told us. And it wasn't until last August that we found out from the local Board of Elections that there was a mold issue with the voting equipment. And Keith, as I said, has just been working his fingers to the bone on this. He went over there Friday in that awful weather for the first time that the county administrator would allow us to see anything. And he didn't get back on this side of the bridge until midnight. So he has really, really been trying to remedy the situation. And we've got voting equipment now, new voting equipment for Worcester County, but they don't have it. It's in my warehouse, and it's going to stay there until they find a decent place to put it. And the county, I'm sorry to say, has been dragging its feet in finding a suitable place. And what they picked right now, I'm investigating as to whether or not the power management for the building is sufficient or not. So,
excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Does your colleague want us to have a word? Sorry, I missed your last name.
Ross. For the record, I'm Keith Ross, the Assistant Deputy for Project Management at the State Board of Elections. And as Administrator Lamone mentioned, that we have been working diligently with them, first of all, to correct the mold issue with the equipment, and then now to work with them insofar as the facility is concerned, so that we can move that equipment back at the appropriate time that they have met all the requirements.
And if they don't, they'll have to prepare the equipment in Glen Burnie and pay to ship it down to the polling places in Worcester County.
Sounds like you're on top of it. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor.
Do we know that there's no similar situation anywhere else in the state?
We're fairly confident that it's not, but we're proactively going to make sure it isn't. Homeland Security is surveying all the local board facilities. Well, not all of them. They're going to do about half before the primary, I think. And I'm initiating a program so that they are all inspected by my people and not just relying on the local Board of Elections staff. So, lesson learned.
Thank you for
thank
your
you.
Efforts, and thank you for going down there until midnight in the storm.
Thank you very much.
Any other motion on IT? Is there a second? 3-0. We're going to move on to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor and Treasurer, Mr. Controller. For the record, my name is Steve Bond, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation.
MDOT is presenting 10 items today. Item 9GM is being withdrawn.
Question is on the Department of Transportation amendment. Other than why Mr. Forts is not here. Give him my regards.
We almost had him promoted to secretary.
I'm glad you were unsuccessful.
But while you were missing, we were giving him a hard time that he was deputy secretary back in like 2003. So he's been there a long time in that dumb two spot. No questions on transportation? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second, 3-0. Secretary? We're going to move on to Department of General Services. Secretary Tripp.
I'll talk quick. Good morning.
Actually, we want you to eat up 4 minutes. Good
morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. The department has 6 items on our agenda, including 1 supplemental, and we are withdrawing the supplemental. Before we take any questions, I would like to acknowledge and thank that the last board meeting, I believe Smith Island Cake was distributed to the board, and the comptroller's office was so kind to send over some of that Smith Island Cake to our facilities department in Annapolis. They enjoyed it greatly, and I did not get a piece of that cake.
You know, I want to add on to that, Mr. Secretary. I never even saw the cake. Somehow, it never made it to me either. I'm bad if I think that it's around the State House or something. Maybe Mr. Nugent knows. I never saw the cake.
We're happy taking
the question. I should be embarrassed to say it was very good. See you guys next time.
Yeah, next time. Any questions on DGS? Is there a motion? Second, DGS 3-0. That concludes our agenda, and I guess in about 2 or 3 minutes we're going to have a bond sale. So
we're back to item 13.
Oh, we're here, ready.
Yep, item 13.
Kristen Lund, who is the Director of Debt Management in the State Treasurer's Office, is here to walk us through the
So we have already taken bids for the $50 million taxable series. Those came in at 10:30. So we got about 2 minutes until the taxable series came in. I'll just show you these real quick. We had 12 bids, which is fantastic. Wells Fargo had the low bid with a ticket of 2.58. So we will be presenting that to y'all when we come back here in a few minutes. All right, so. Right now we have 7 bidders signed up for the tax exempt series, which is good. And we should start seeing some of that.
I'll just point out, I think we might have mentioned this before, but since I became treasurer, and that's the beginning of my government, we have saved the taxpayers over $350 million in refunding general obligation bonds. The federal Congress last month, 2 months ago, put an end to our capacity essentially to do that, which is a blow.
How did they do that? What is the...
They just did it, and they said you can't do it anymore. There now is a bipartisan effort to change that and to reinstate the capacity. And I will, we're going to be working together to see that done. It's like refinancing your house. The ability to take advantage is
why. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
You know.
But we'll go down in a bipartisan way.
How was the Smith Island cake?
Yeah, boy, I wish I had tried.
Send it. These guys done. All the folks in my area liked it, and I'm sure yours did too. And DGS.
I'm going to get to the bottom of where our cake went. At least Secretary Churchill knows that it went down to some of the guys that were working hard, but mine could have.
All right, so we got all 7 of those bids. It looks like they're very tight. City right now is a little bitter. We'll have to go in and verify that. But it looks ago. I guess you got $70 million in premium and a 2.83 tick, which is right around what we were expecting. So I think this is good news. Let's go verify.
You want to make that bid screen? You can leave the bid screen up for
sure.
People.
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Well, it's going to be very interesting because if things go the way people are saying, in terms of inflation, interest rates, comptroller. I move that the board adopt the resolutions before us today concerning the state and local facilities loan of 2018 first series. In particular, I move that the board ratify and approve the preliminary official statement dated February 28, 2018. That's the statement on the basis of which people made the bids. The summary notices of sale for the 2018 first series A and B bonds published in the bond buyer on February 23, 2018, and the resolutions adopted by the board on February 21st, 2018, with respect to the bonds, would ask for a second and a vote on these motions.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Unanimous.
It appears the ayes have it.
Secondly, I move that Citigroup Global Markets Incorporated be declared the successful bidder for the first Series A tax-exempt bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $475 million, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $69,973,234.25. I'm always intrigued. And a true interest cost of 2.825789%. And I further move that the first Series A bonds be issued in the resized amounts and maturities and at the interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bonds. Would ask for a second and a vote on the second Series A motions.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thirdly, a move that Wells Fargo Bank N.A. be declared the successful bidder for the first Series B taxable bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $50 million, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a true interest cost of 2.575999%, and further move that the first Series B bonds, the taxable bonds, be issued in the resized amounts and in the maturities and at the interest rate set forth in the successful bid for the bonds, and would ask for a second and a vote on the second Series B motions.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And finally, I move that the board authorize and approve the issuance of the final official statement for these bonds.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you, and congratulations, Governor.
Congratulations to the Treasurer and her team. That concludes our very successful 1 hour and 5 minute meeting.